So today we're gonna continue our series, Pack Your Bags, and we're really excited about this. Last week, Andy did a really good job. I know that's shocking to you, but he did a great job of kicking off this series, Pack Your Bag, and we kinda opened it up by looking at the big question or what we're hoping to accomplish in this series. We said packing your bag is really about how to prepare for what's next. And the idea of preparing for what's next is really important because, as all of us know, the more prepared we are for what's next, the more prepared we are for what's next. Being prepared is really important. For some of you, kind of being prepared is your love language. You love being prepared. There's nothing about you that wants to be spontaneous, and I understand you. We get along well. Some of you are really spontaneous, and the idea of preparing, you don't really love preparing, but you do it because you've learned that when you're prepared, things just tend to go better. You think about going on vacation, right? None of you would love to say, hey, we're going on vacation next week. Where are we going? Well, I'm not gonna tell you, but just prepare. That's hard to do. Nobody wants to be on a ski slope in their scuba gear, right? But that's what can happen if we fail to prepare well. Now, of course, when we're preparing for a vacation or something simple like that, preparing can be kind of easy. But when we think about our life, preparing for what's next in our life, well, that's a whole nother ball game. Preparing for what's next in our life can be unbelievably difficult. Because a lot of the things that are coming next in our life catch us by surprise. And even the what's next things that we're preparing for, even the what's next that we're looking forward to can catch us by surprise. We can't control everything about the next season. And we certainly can't control everything about the transition from kind of season A to season B. It's really difficult to navigate that. We can think back in our lives about all the different transitions that we've been through from one season to the next. And man, even the ones that we were excited about came with a lot of difficulty. And it was hard to navigate how to move well into the next season because so much of it was just unclear. Part of the reason is because what's next always leads to change. And anytime there's change in our life, it breeds an element of confusion, even in the things that we're looking forward to. You remember being in fifth grade and you were moving into middle school next year and you were really excited about it, but it meant a lot of change for you. And then you got into middle school and it was nothing but confusion, wasn't it? Middle school's the worst, right? And you got in there and it was really confusing. And then you got that first armpit hair, more change. More change that led to more confusion. And then you went from not caring about taking a shower more than once a month to taking three a day because of her or because of him. And then you wanted to fix your hair, more change. And now you look back on that hairdo you had in middle school and you think, what was I thinking? A lot of confusion, that's what you were thinking. That's how you got there. No matter what we're the what next that we have to look forward to, whether we're looking forward to it or not, it involves a lot of confusion because it will involve a lot of change, even the ones that we're excited about. Maybe for you, it was getting out of high school and moving out of your parents' house. Maybe it was going to college. Maybe it was entering the workforce. Maybe it was a new dating relationship. Or maybe it was a marriage. You were so excited about that marriage and you stood there at the altar and some guy said some words and you don't remember anything he said because you just couldn't wait for the honeymoon. And it was everything you hoped it would be. And then it ended. And you got home. And now you're married. And there's a lot of confusion. You know why? There's a lot of change. There's a ton of change. That's what makes it so difficult. In fact, when we think about what's next, the reason it's hard is because what's next is often what's new, and what's new is usually what's unknown. What's new is usually what's unknown. That's what makes these next in our life so difficult. I mean, where we are today, we have a lot of clarity. There's a lot we know, but when we think about moving into the future, there is just so much unknown. Even if we think we know where we're heading, there's a lot of unknowns during that transition. Man, we could probably think and talk for hours about different transitions from season to season that we've all been through and how difficult it was to navigate. Man, when I think back on my life, there have been dozens of those. Probably the hardest transition that I can think of going through was going from being a young married couple kind of on our own to becoming parents for the first time. I mean, that junk will wreck your world. Everything changes. You know this, right? I mean, some of you who are parents, you completely know. I mean, I can think back, and we did everything we could to prepare. Like, we tried so hard to be prepared. When we found out that we were pregnant, we started reading all the books about labor and delivery. This is weird, too. Like, I don't know why we say we were pregnant. Like, I mean, I was involved, but she did all the work. Like, she grew the thing. So, for 9 months, for 9 months, she was pregnant. I was supporting, I was there. And for 9 months, I mean, we read everything we could. Like, you know, they called it labor and delivery. It sounded intense. So we started reading as much as we could about it. Like, we read about how to be a good parent for a baby. You know, we was like, we're gonna have schedules, we're gonna do feedings and the certain things, and not this pacifier, but that one, but take it away at this exact date, or, you know, they'll fall apart. It's like, there was just so much to learn. And it was all brand new. And we studied and worked as hard as we could. And then my wife goes into labor and we're so excited, and we get to the hospital and we walk in and we tell the doctor, we have our birth plan here. And he just kind of smiled. He was like, you guys are so precious. Thank you for that. So we went into the thing. Labor and delivery didn't go like the plan, like we thought, okay? It was chaotic. It was a war going on at one point, and it was crazy. I learned two things during labor and delivery. Well, three, I learned one, why they call it labor, okay? I learned two, wives are crazy awesome compared to men. Like, ladies are so much stronger than men, it's ridiculous, we should give up now. Okay, that was the other thing. And the last thing I learned is that I didn't wanna go through it again. I remember when it was over, I turned to my wife and I said, I don't know how that was for you, but I don't think I can go through that again. Like, that was just crazy. It was so difficult, and I was just cheering you on. Like, I don't know. But then a day later, man, if you went through this, you remember, a day later, I got in my car, and all they did is make sure I buckled this little person in correctly, and they said, good luck. I'm like, I'm barely keeping myself alive. And now you've given me a 7-pound version, and I don't know what to do. Everything is unknown. Everything is confusing. We get home. We've been home for less than 24 hours. We have our first night at home with an infant. You've been there. Like, it's 1:30 in the morning. And this girl is losing her mind, completely losing her mind. Let me show you a picture of my daughter when she was younger. This is her, our first child. I know all the moms. And this is me. I know you're thinking, you're like, you haven't changed in 17 years. It's amazing. I have more facial hair. I couldn't grow it back then. I was still such a kid. So this is us, okay? This is her a few months later. Now, at 1:30 in the morning, we've been home for like a day. At 1:30 in the morning, she is flat losing her mind. And I am too. Because I don't know what to do. I mean, she is screaming, I'm screaming, she's crying, I'm weeping, like, it's 1:30, I just wanna go to sleep, right? And I'm looking at her and I'm like, if you will just tell me what's wrong, I will fix it. If you can just tell me, like, point to something, like, anything, you know? My wife says, I think I know what's wrong. And I go, well, what, just, what is it? She says, she's a baby. I'm like, no, she's not. She's an alien. There's something wrong. I'm like, I don't think we should have one of these. We're not prepared. At 1:30, I begged my wife to let me take her to the hospital. I'm like, I think she's dying. We should go to the ER right now. Like, we're gonna be in jail. We're gonna kill this daughter. My wife says, just relax, you know? So I did. Went to bed. I think she went to bed later that night. I'm not sure. It was so difficult. It was so difficult. Now, I have four kids now, right? When our fourth kid was born, it was 1:30 in the morning and she starts crying. You know what we did? We turned the monitor down. I know she ate like a pound of dirt earlier, but whatever, she'll be fine, right? She got 34 pacifiers in her bed. She'll find one. Isn't it amazing? And the reason is because I had clarity then. The reason is because it wasn't so new. It wasn't so confusing. Now, of course, some time has gone by, and you know, while I'm not up at 1:30 in the morning anymore, like wondering if we should go to the ER all of a sudden, I am up at 1:30 in the morning, kind of just hoping she comes home from prom now, right? Totally different season, totally different problems. But still, there's a lack of clarity because it's unknown. It's hard to fully kind of understand. Now, here's why. It's because transitions always come with cloudy conditions. This is the problem. When we're moving from where we are in a season that is known into something that may be a little less known, whether we're excited or shocked or not about it, we're entering into something that's gonna come with cloudy conditions. And the cloudy conditions really hampers our ability to move forward well. In fact, I would love to illustrate this for you really quick. Mitchell, come here real quick. Mitchell, you guys wave at Mitchell. Clap for him real quick.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, a lot of you know Mitchell. I love this guy so much. Mitchell's been on staff with us here at Woodstock City for, what, like 7 years or something, right?
Something like that.
Something like that, a long time. So yeah. For those of you at other churches, Mitchell works on staff with us. He's one of our pastors here, kind of involved in a lot of our music and production and I'm sure a bunch of other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Mitchell, incredible dad, incredible husband, a lot of good things about you. My guess is that, I mean, you have four daughters.
Yeah.
That's a lot of transition, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember that, like, first one at home?
It's a constant cloudy condition.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing's
exactly.
ever the same.
Exactly, yeah. All right. Yeah, it's how it feels, right? Okay, yeah. So here's what we're gonna do. So now right now, as you stand here, you have a lot of clarity about, like, in the room, you can see clearly, right? Like,
sure.
I mean, just prove it. This is stupid, but like, how many fingers am I holding up?
Two.
Not a trick question, right?
Yeah.
Two?
Yeah,
you two. Can see clearly, right?
Sure.
Now, the problem is that right now you're in a season where things are clear, but what happens when you move into the next season and you kind of transition from what's clear into what's cloudy? It makes it a lot more difficult, right? We're going to show people how this looks. Mitchell, I'm going to ask you to put these on real quick.
Okay.
This is for your protection. You need to workers' comp. I don't know. So okay. Put that on. Okay. Now, okay. This contraption here, Mitchell, this thing represents kind of the transition from one season to the next, okay? So hop in here.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah, you did. If you're getting a paycheck, you signed up for this. Okay.
All right.
So Mitchell right now has a lot of clarity, but Mitchell has stepped into like a new season. It's brand new. And there's a lot of transition in that season, and that transition brings with it cloudy conditions, and his view begins to look like this.
Uh-oh.
Are you doing okay, Mitchell?
I think.
Okay. Now, this is literally how it feels when you are in a transition. You're wanting to find clarity, and you're wanting to make good decisions, and you're wanting to move forward, but you can't because you just can't see anything.
I can't see anything.
You can't see anything.
No.
Now, here's the problem. If the transition was just going to be foggy for a while and we could wait it out, that would be one thing. But the transition itself has a movement associated to it. In fact, Mitchell, how many fingers am I holding up?
I have no idea.
No, but like, look harder.
I can't see you.
It's two, Mitchell. How many fingers?
Sorry. I think it's two, maybe.
You think it's two? It's two. Just say two.
If you say it's two, it's two.
Exactly. Now, Mitchell can't see clearly. Why? Because he's moving into a new season that's just full of uncertainty. And that uncertainty brings with it cloudy conditions. Now, I don't want you to die, so you can come on out.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Yeah. Hey, you guys give Mitchell a hand real quick.
Thanks.
Now, I know that's silly, but this is literally how it feels when we are walking into a new season full of unknowns, because it is incredibly, incredibly cloudy. But let me make it a little worse for us. It isn't just that it's cloudy in the new season, in the new transition. That new transition brings with it some really important decisions. And these important decisions come in the middle of those cloudy conditions. And again, the decisions matter because the decisions that we make when we're in that transitional kind of state really set the direction and the tone and the trajectory for what is next in our life. And so many of us can look back at seasons where we went from what's known to a new season that was unknown, and we were forced to make decisions, and we didn't make good ones. In fact, a lot of our biggest regrets come from a decision that we made in the middle of a transition in life. And it was in that transition where we were forced to choose, and we just didn't know how to choose. And so we did our best, and we made a bad decision, and it led to a bad direction. In fact, it may have led to a lot of bad decisions. Directions and regrets. When we think about our kind of life transitions, I guess with the decisions, we have a few options. One option would be that we just don't do anything. That's an option. But deciding to not decide is a decision. And deciding to not decide when you're in that transition is a decision to not move forward. And that doesn't really help us. It definitely doesn't help us get clarity. Of course, the other option is to just cross our fingers, close our eyes, and hope for the best. But hoping for the best around important life decisions is no way to live our life. None of us want to do that. So here's the real question, and this is what we want to try to answer today. How do we discover clarity in the midst of what's cloudy? How can we discover clarity of decision-making? How can we discover clarity of what's next? How can we discover clarity about how to set ourselves up for success in what's next? How do we do that when transitions introduce so much fog and when transitions introduce so much cloudiness. How do we figure that out? Now, the good news is that there is a way to do that. And whether you're a Jesus follower or not, what we're gonna talk about is gonna be so applicable for you. When we open up the pages of Scripture, it is full of stories of transitions. Some of them are kind of small and minor. Some of them are really, really big. The one we're gonna look at today is one of the biggest ones of all. In fact, the example is a perfect one of what we shouldn't do. But there's a lot we can learn from what we shouldn't do. A transition we're gonna look at is the transition of Israel's kings. Some of you know a little more about kind of the Old Testament than others. Let me give you a quick context. Israel, as a nation, originally didn't have any kings. They had some judges that were kind of ruling over and making good decisions for the people. But, you know, as Israel looked around at all the other countries, everybody else seemed to have a king but them, and they got a little jealous and eventually decided as a group that they wanted to have a king. So they elected this guy named Saul. Saul became the very first king. Saul had some good moments. He had some crazy moments too. It led to King David, who you've probably heard of, David and Goliath, that guy. He became the king, King David. After King David, his son became king, the heir apparent, Solomon, King Solomon. Solomon was a really interesting guy. He was thought to be the most wise person on the planet, not even at his time, but really of all time. I mean, outside of Jesus, which is unfair, I mean, it's God in a bod, he's gonna be smarter. But Solomon was it. People came from all over the world just to sit at his feet and listen to his wisdom, to ask him questions. And so Solomon is the king, but he's gonna die soon. It's about 930 or so BC. Solomon passes away. The next person in line for the kingship is his son, who has an amazing name. If you're looking to kind of name your next son something, I would choose this, Rehoboam. Rehoboam. There will be no one else in his class named that. It'll be perfect, okay? Rehoboam. Now, ironically, as you're gonna see in a minute, Rehoboam actually means to enlarge his people. That's what it stands for. So now Rehoboam is about to become king. He's 41 years old, which is old enough to have a little wisdom himself, but apparently Solomon had not done a great job of really preparing Rehoboam for this moment. Now, I know that you've been through some seasons and moved into new transitions that were kind of daunting. None of us have been through one like this. Like none of us have been into a transition from going to be where you are to becoming king of a nation. And that's what Rehoboam is going through. And what we're gonna see in this story is a perfect example of what not to do, but how easily it could have been different for him. Okay, here's how the whole thing starts. This is in 1 Kings. We're gonna begin in chapter 12. Rehoboam went to Shechem, which is a city that they went to. All of Israel is gonna gather there. Ironically, it's a different city than they typically would do this in, but Rehoboam wanted to kind of gather the entire nation together and get as much buy-in as he could. So he chose Shechem for that reason. So they go to Shechem, for all of Israel had gone there to make him king. He's the heir apparent. In fact, no one's even arguing about this. No one is having kind of election problems. No one's kind of debating who it should be. They all know. They all know it's gonna be Rehoboam. Here's what happens next. When Jeroboam, different guy, super confusing, okay? He's a different guy. When Jeroboam, son of Nebat, heard this, that Solomon had died and that Rehoboam was about to be king, he was still in Egypt where he had fled from King Solomon. He returned from Egypt. Now, quick context. So there's this guy, Jeroboam, amazing name as well. He worked for King Solomon, Rehoboam's dad. And he was kind of in his court. In fact, he was a taskmaster for King Solomon. So he had a firsthand experience working directly with the people of Israel. And the people of Israel were getting more and more and more disgruntled with Solomon. Because there was high taxation, there was a lot of forced labor. Solomon was building unbelievable palaces and temples, but he was doing it at the expense of the people. And so Jeroboam got mad about this, and he had a confrontation with Solomon. Well, when you have a confrontation with the king, you lose. So he had to flee, and he ran away to Egypt to save his life. But once he heard that Solomon had died, and his friend who he knew, Rehoboam, was gonna become king, he thought, hey, I need to come back. Well, he comes back. And everybody sees him coming back, and they know that he understands the plight of the nation. So they gather with him, and they say, hey, you're the perfect person to go to our brand new king. I mean, he's been king for 12 minutes, but you're the perfect person to go ask him to do things a little differently, because Solomon really made it difficult for us. See what you can do to persuade him to make it easier. So he does. Jeroboam walks up to Rehoboam. Still in this moment, he's just become king. He's just been kind of coronated. Your father, he says to Rehoboam, put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you. So he asks him, hey, can you make things a little easier? Your dad was awesome, but horrible. Make it easier. What do you think? Rehoboam answered, go away for 3 days, which is a smart start, and then come back to me. So the people went away. So Rehoboam, brand new, it's hard to imagine how foggy the condition is, and he's automatically faced with a really, really important decision. So he goes away for a few days, and in the process, he begins to ask some people around him what they think he should do. Here's what happens. King Rehoboam consulted the elders, okay, the smarter people, who had served his father Solomon during his lifetime. How would you advise me to answer these people? He asked, and they replied, if today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servant. So the elders say, Rehoboam, this isn't that complicated of a decision. I know you feel it's complicated because you've been king for 30 seconds. It isn't that complicated. Your dad was difficult. If you'll serve them a little up front, not even forever, just put them first for a moment. They will be in your hand the entire time. They will serve you long term if you'll serve them just right now. That was really good advice from the elders. Of course, Rehoboam gets more, but Rehoboam rejected the advice of the elders that the elders gave him, and he consulted the young men who had grown up with him and were serving him. He asked them, what is your advice? Now, we're gonna pause the story for a minute. This is really important. So Rehoboam gets really good advice from the elders. He rejects it because he doesn't know that he can trust them, and he goes to his buddies who were just as dumb as he is. And he says, hey, what do you think we should do? What do you think we should do? Well, the guys that he asked weren't just his friends. They were serving him. They had a stake in this decision. Like whatever Rehoboam decided meant something for them, which meant that you couldn't fully trust their advice. Now, just for us really quick, did you know that we have those kinds of people in our life too? In fact, I read a book over the summer, this past summer, incredible book, Henry Cloud and John Townsend. They talked about these different kinds of relationships that we have in our life. And they said that we have seven. They called them the seven C's of relationships. I'm gonna go through it really quick and we'll pause at the end. In all of our lives, we have people who are contaminants. They're just evil people that mean no good for you. They're toxic. We should expunge them like yesterday. That's the contaminants. We have chronics. Chronics are the people who we constantly are saying, bless their heart. That's the chronics. But the reason we say that isn't because they're unlucky. In most cases, the chronics are just foolish. And it's important to know that because foolish people make foolish decisions. And often when the grenade explodes in that decision, the shrapnel can hit you if you're too close. So if you have chronics in your life, something to pay attention to. Care receivers are people who are in need and we are able to meet some needs. It's a really important group. The only thing with this is we need to keep some boundaries with them. Those guys wrote about 400 books on boundaries. You should get one of those. They talk about that. Casuals, those are just friendships, acquaintances, girls we'd love to go to get a hamburger with. We're not gonna share our deepest, darkest sin with them necessarily, but you know, a good burger, that's great. We've got colleagues, people we work with, maybe teammates. Now, here's the last two, though. We're going to focus on these for a minute. Comrades and coaches. Comrades are the people who are your close friends. Comrades are the people who show you grace and love. They're the people who kind of comfort you in your afflictions, but then they afflict you if you get too comfortable. That's who those guys are, and they're really important in our life. In our story, Rehoboam had those. They're his friends, and he trusted them. But the last C is coaches, and coaches are really important as well. The elders were the coaches in the story. Coaches are the subject matter experts of life. They're the people who have been through what you're about to go through. They're the people who can bring clarity in the midst of what's unbelievably cloudy. If you think about the example with Mitchell and I, it's when Mitchell's inside kind of this new season transition area and he can't see clearly at all. I knew exactly how many fingers I'm holding up. It's two. Mitchell couldn't see at all. I had clarity though. He didn't because I was standing outside as a coach, outside of that transition. So this is what's happening right now with Rehoboam. He's got two different people who are speaking into his life, and he chooses to go with his buddies. The young men who had grown up with him replied, these people have said to you, your father, the people of Israel, your father put a heavy yoke on us, but make our yoke lighter now and tell them, my little finger is thicker than my father's waist, which we're like, what does that even mean? It's a cut down, okay? My little finger is thicker than my father's waist. My father, he goes on, my father laid on you a heavy yoke. You think it was heavy? I'm gonna make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I'm gonna scourge you with scorpions. I don't even know what that means, but it sounds terrible. Like, I was spanked as a kid a few times, never with scorpions. Never happened. That sounds miserable. So his buddies are like, hey, if they're being whiny babies, give them something to whine about. Like, if they're gonna act this way, you go and tell them. And that's what he did. 3 days later, Jeroboam shows up with the whole nation, and he looks at him, and he does the finger and the scorpion thing, and it really makes him mad. In fact, it made him so mad that they revolted. When all of Israel saw that the king, Rehoboam, refused to listen to them, they answered the king, what share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel, look after your own house, David, which I know doesn't mean a lot to us, but again, back 900 BC, oh my gosh, this was a cut down of all cut downs. It's almost like hashtag not my king. That's what this is, okay? They're saying, this guy, we can't trust this guy. We don't like him. He won't listen to us. We are begging him for just a little bit of lightening of the load, and he refuses to lighten it at all. In fact, it got so bad that the 10 tribes that were the northern tribes of Israel out of the 12 seceded from Israel, and they left, leaving only 2 for Rehoboam. The story kind of concludes, when all the Israelites heard that Jeroboam had returned, they were excited. They liked this guy. They sent for him, and they called him to the assembly, and they made him king over all of Israel. Only the tribe of Judah remained loyal to the house of David. And this was the beginning of the end for Israel. The kingdom divides. The northern kingdom remains called Israel. The southern kingdom's called Judah. 2 different kings, 2 different directions. It was only a matter of time before Assyria and Babylon invade, drag everybody off, and Israel is no more as a nation. And it all started from cloudy conditions and a really important decision that Rehoboam couldn't have clarity to make. Now, before we throw him under the bus too much, though, we should just acknowledge that during Rehoboam's transition, listen, his view was really cloudy. It was very cloudy, but he did have clarity. The elders had clarity, but they didn't have any authority. Unfortunately, Rehoboam's friends were trusted, but they weren't really trustworthy. Now, to bring this kind of into our life, again, we're not gonna be made king next week, but we all are going to have a what's next coming probably sooner than we may think. And it may be a diagnosis, or it may be a retirement, or it may be a graduation, or a new job, or a new relationship, but whatever that what's next is for us, it is going to come with some of the same problems, and we can't avoid them, because we can't avoid transitions, and we can't avoid those really important decisions. When you bump into your next one, it's gonna look like this too. Your view is going to be cloudy. And no matter how hard you work to find clarity, it's gonna be almost impossible. It's gonna be cloudy. And your coaches, if you have them, will have clarity. The question is, are we gonna give them authority? And of course, we're gonna have some friends that we trust, but are our friends trustworthy in those decisions? You see, if the people you're trusting have a stake in the decision, they can't really be trusted with the decision. If your friends have a stake in the decision, they can't be trusted with that decision. So what are you gonna do to prepare for what's next in your life? What are you gonna do to prepare for this next transition? I'll tell you, it has to be about finding coaches. The first thing you have to do is find some coaches. Coaches aren't that hard to find. In fact, you can look around the room and find some right now. Coaches are people who are a little further ahead than you are. They're people who have been through it before. They have some expertise that you don't have. Now, the problem and the challenge is that we think we know what we need to know. We think that we know all we need to know about what's next. We've read the books. We studied parenting. We know how to raise an infant, even though we've never had one. Good luck, right? And that's how all of our transitions are gonna feel. We can study all we want, we can research all we want, but until we bring in outside counsel who's outside of our own fog, we're never gonna really find clarity. So the first step to prepare for what's next is to find some coaches. But here's the next thing, and it's just as important. We got to learn to trust their coaching. Trust their coaching. Because here's what's going to happen. And some of you know this. You've been through it. When you're in the middle of a transition into what's next for you, everything gets so cloudy and you can't see anything clearly. And you can't trust the people outside of the clouds either. That's the hardest part. Whether it's a personal thing for you or maybe a family transition to a season, or maybe even you're leading a corporation or something, you know, like that through a transition, it is gonna be so cloudy, and it doesn't just cloud your ability to make a decision, it clouds your trust for the people who are outside of the cloud. We see that all the time. We have experienced that, haven't we? So when we're looking at making a transition, it's not good enough just to have some coaches. We've gotta find some people who we can trust. And the way that we do that is we begin to trust them slowly over time. We invite coaches into our life and we begin to get to know them. We begin to engage them in things that where we need their trust, but if something goes wrong, our life doesn't fall apart. And the reason we do that is because at some point we're really gonna need their counsel and we're really gonna need to hear what they have to say, but what they have to say may look different than what we're seeing because they aren't living in the fog that we're living in. And we're gonna have to be able to trust them. So before you get there, what does it look like for you to find coaches? What does it look like for us to begin to trust in those coaches? It's unbelievably important in preparing for what's next. It's the exact opposite of what Rehoboam did. You know, we began the conversation with this big question. How do we discover clarity in the midst of what's cloudy? I can tell you from personal experience that if we don't prepare well, we're gonna be in trouble. There have been so many moments in my life where I look back, and those are the regrets, and maybe you feel the same way. There are so many moments I look back on, and I felt like I could handle it, and I felt like I could deal with it. I felt like I could control it, but I couldn't control in the midst of the fog, and I couldn't control in that kind of cloudy condition because I couldn't see clearly. You know, the very first time I ever went and met with a counselor, it was, and I've talked to this before, the very first time I ever sat in front of a counselor was when things in my marriage weren't going great. And I thought I could figure it out. In fact, guys, I thought if she would just listen to me, things would be fine. But for some reason, she wasn't doing that. And things weren't going well at home. And for several months, we were at odds beyond what I ever thought would happen in our home. And things weren't going well. And I remember thinking, I have no idea how to fix it. Do you know why? Because I was in the middle of a transition and everything was cloudy. And I went and sat with a counselor and I told this guy what was going on. And he looked at me and I'm telling you, it took him 10 seconds. And he said, Gavin, the reason it's not going well is because everything you're doing for your wife, you're doing it so that she will reciprocate later. That's the problem. And I was like, say that again, it's too cloudy over here. What do you mean? He said, you love your wife not because you love her, you love your wife because you want something from her. You did the dishes because you want something later, right? You looked after the kids, which you can't say you babysat them, they're your kids anyway, dummy, but you babysat your kids because you wanted to play golf Friday. And then she was frustrated about golf. You're like, well, you can't be frustrated, it's even now, it's an equal score. He goes, you gotta love your wife because you love her, not so you get something from her. It blew my mind. Now, as I stand here now, it seems so basic. But when you're in that moment, nothing is simple. Nothing is basic. So here's the solution. If we wanna move into what's next and make really good decisions and not have any regrets on the other side, there is a way to do it. There's only one way. And it's to pack our bags now, with coaches who we can trust later. And if we will commit to do that, it will change everything about our next season, because the decisions that we'll be making will be launching us in the direction that we want to go in, even when we can't see it ourselves.